Meeting order, I believe we have a quorum. Any audience participation? Minutes of the March 26, 2015 meeting.
Move to approve, Mr. Smith.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Motion carries. Staff reports, financial.
Right, financial progress report was attachment 3A in your folders. This one takes us through March 31st, so this is the three quarters way through the fiscal year, 75% of the way through. If you look down at line 9 at the bottom, we've spent 77% of the budget, so we're right where we should be. We're a little bit over right now, but we had some expenditures in the first half of the year that won't repeat in the second half. So I think we're in good shape, right where we should be, and recommend approval.
So moved.
Motion, second.
Second.
Discussion. Hearing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Like, sign it, move. Thank you. Technical progress report. Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to start out today basically talking a little bit about the federal funding situation and then going into the meeting that we had after TAP last week about transportation infrastructure funding. So basically what it seems to come down to is that the biggest debate now on the federal side is whether they're going to do a two-month extension or an extension through the end through December. The biggest issue is if they do an extension through December, they have to find $11 billion to make the shortfall from when the trust fund does go broke. So that's one of the big sticking points. If they do a two-month, they're pretty sure the trust fund is going to have money through July. And one of the things that we keep hearing from congressmen and they're saying is that they're willing to wait if it means they're going to get a long-term bill done. But unfortunately, that's what we've been hearing for like the last 7 or 8 years. And it continues to be kicked down the can, or kick the can continues to be kicked down the road. So with that, I mean, I think it's kind of timely from the standpoint that last week, stemming from the gas tax conversation and the resolution from the last meeting, we decided to put together a transportation funding infrastructure meeting for locals. After our TAC last week, I think we had quite a few of you here were there last week. And really what we just wanted to do is have that discussion about things other than the gas tax and issues that either communities are dealing with or communities' ideas that we think could raise revenues or decrease costs, et cetera. In your packet, there is an attachment 3B, which does summarize kind of the six main points that we kind of pulled out of that meeting, and I'll just go through those relatively quickly. One of the big issues we talked about was the permissive license plate fee system and what roads are eligible for permissive taxes, what roads you could spend them on. It seemed to be some confusion of, you know, if they were, you were able to use them more liberally before than you are now. Also, there was a discussion from a county level of being able to increase property or sales taxes, potentially that they would be allocated, then sub-allocated to local governments for transportation funds. Third, there was a big discussion about assessments and how Akron assesses nearby property owners for road projects for local streets. You know, what we heard from Akron was that it's been a very successful program and helps defray the cost of their, helps them expend or expand their resurfacing program by estimated at least 33%, something around those lines. And wondering if that's something that, you know, we could get more information on if other communities are interested in that. Fourth, another issue that was discussed was sort of this idea of, do local communities really know what their costs are for road maintenance, especially at, you know, depending on how long their system is going to survive or last before things need to be resurfaced or reconstructed. You know, we obviously do a lot of PCR data from the state level, and, you know, we look at federally functionally classified roads, but for smaller roads, there were some communities that felt like they didn't really know what the cost of their system was over a period of time, from 5 years to 10 years to 20 years. Also, we discussed, basically, I think one of the things, the conclusions that the group came to was sort of that this is a local issue, as in, there's not a lot of hope that the feds or state are going to jump in and really solve this problem for us. And you know, we talked about the limited use of federal funds from the standpoint that, you know, even if there are more federal funds, they're going to go through an AMATS process. They're not going to be sub-allocated to communities. So therefore, you know, you might get a new project out of a 10-cent gas tax increase, but you also might not. And really, it's going to come down to the locals being able to raise funds potentially for more infrastructure. And then finally, the last point that was brought up was we talked a little bit about what happened in Ravenna and Barberton regarding local income tax initiatives that were solely earmarked for transportation projects. Barberton talked quite a bit about the success that they've had so far, the amount of money they've been able to raise, how they've been able to bond, do some bonding to also expand that program a little bit. Also, Ravenna just passed an income tax levy for roads. So there's some precedent for that in our communities where we're taking a stance that way and trying to get revenues increasing from there. And really, I think what we wanted to do was, one, present it to the policy committee, give you the opportunity, if you weren't there, to, if you have any comments on these issues, you know, to raise them or share them. And then really, I think the staff was looking for some direction on, was this a good, helpful conversation, and we continue to go our merry way, or are there things that we should be looking at that you'd like to see potentially us follow through on or do some more research on? And I think from the staff's perspective, if we did something like that, it would be very helpful to devise some kind of working group or subcommittee or something that could potentially guide us in that process. So with that, I'd leave it up to the chairman and you all if that's something you want to pursue, or if you just take this as information to go to the order.
Yes, sir. Alderman Bertrand, Mayor Harris. I've done some research on assessment on Hall Rock real estate. I believe it's in the municipal code 737, I think it's 242. Which is a general assessment against all property owners, and this would include all the not-for-profits, all the state, any local entity would pay this tax based upon the value of property or the pump's footage. Have you explored that at all with this subcommittee?
Well, we don't have the last week's meeting was the first group discussion we had about the whole issue, and so really the only thing that we've explored at this point was what Akron's already done in terms of assessments and how they do it. They do it, I believe, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's based on frontage, and then there's different rates depending on residential, commercial, things like that. We didn't get the sense from that meeting that any other communities are doing infrastructure assessments. Is that accurate, or does anyone else here know of any other communities?
Kent has for
okay.
Two, 3 decades?
Quakers does it for like sewer and water.
Sewer and water, okay.
Yeah, in that statute that I referred to, you can do sewer, water, storm sewers, streets, sidewalks. It's very, very broad. It's a very long statute. And the interesting thing that I found was that an assessment can be done against the state, local, and a lot of us have state property within our jurisdictions. We also have not-for-profits. I have a very large not-for-profit in mind. Mm-hmm. And we have, I don't know if they have state, but we have, you know, township owned property. So that everybody, because everybody uses the roads. Everybody, whether you're a not-for-profit or a state, everybody uses it. This way, if you go on value or footage, then you make a general assessment against everyone, and everybody pays for it that way. And if you look at the valuation of your real estate, it's a very, very small tax. Very small. Because if you look at your entire community, what your entire community is valued at, it's very painless. It generates a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So it's something we ought to all of us in AMATS ought to explore. And you can pass it through council, or you can do a general public decision at the beginning of the month.
Any other comments? Is there any pleasure amongst the group that we should form a subcommittee in order to explore this further? I think there's a lot of technical details that probably require legal counsel, not only from each community, but even in a broader sense from just the state, that we could probably get somebody to come in and talk to us about it. But the bottom line is, it's not just that simple sometimes. There's a political fallback for the elected officials, but it is a method, and we're probably somewhere around the last time the 95 rates, and they haven't, in Kent, they haven't updated that for 20 years. So what was supposed to be 30% is now down around 12. So it's a decision. It's a tool. You have to have the money somehow in order to do it, or you accept the fact that your infrastructure is deteriorated and won't be repaired.
And I think from our agency perspective is that we just wanted to be able to provide that forum for communities. If there are things that you have heard about or haven't heard and could be explored further, we'd be happy to help do that. Because we know that, unfortunately, our federal funds don't really, they wouldn't solve the problem on its own, even if we got, a 30-cent gas tax increase.
Not on that topic, but actually on the number one on the list, the license plate fee. Al, do you have any background on that? That can we spend that license plate fee not on county roads? Or does it have to be strictly a county road? And that was
you're getting your own distribution of that directly.
Correct.
That can go on any road. There's a small fee that goes on the gas tax that we keep track of for each community in that county. Each county engineer keeps track of this small distribution of gas tax money, and that has to be used on what at one time was a county road in your city. And my office right now reevaluating to make sure that all the roads that used to be county roads are, in fact, on our list. City of Barberton has suggested they'd like to add some roads. We can't exactly add them if they weren't qualified as a county road, but we can certainly make sure that none have been left off. It's not very much money when it comes down to it. Most communities would kind of bank it for a while.
Right.
And then when they do want to do that major road, it can be added into even a federal highway project, as your local share. Or whatever. It's the money that's there. It doesn't go away. It just stays in that fund until there is an eligible road to use. One community in Summit County, Reminderville, only has one road that it's eligible for. That makes it a little bit, hairy for them. Of course, they're a small community. They don't get a whole lot of money there anyway, but they may only want to use that money once every 15 years or something, because they only resurface it once every 15 years. But regardless, that money stays there, and it doesn't, go to another community or anything. If you don't use it, it stays there until you have an eligible road. And at one time back in the day, I was with Kent for a lot of years, and at one time, Kent was dividing up their costs for snow and ice control. And they say maybe, 15% of their highways were these eligible ones. And they were applying for reimbursement for their snow and ice control based on 15% of their total costs onto those highways. So it wasn't just for resurfacing. We try to encourage people to actually do something that shows to the public money spent, but it could even be used for snow and ice control if you want to go to that detail in your analysis and budget process. It's just by the revised code, the county engineer is charged with certifying that the money went the right place, that's all.
I do have a question on Ohio Revised Code on that, and it's more from my finance director. She used to be a finance director in Cuyahoga County, and she said they were all the communities were just distributed that money at the beginning of the year to use on the roads. So that's the question, I guess, my finance director has. Why in Summit County is it different than Cuyahoga County?
I don't know. Just following the revised code. Maybe Cuyahoga County didn't. I don't know.
If you go through the code and look at it, there are, I think, four different permissive taxes. And it's, in some cases, if the county engineer has applied for one then the local community is no longer eligible to apply for it. I think there's two that are only eligible to the county, or one eligible to the county only, one eligible to the municipality only, these other two that who gets it first actually sees it. And that should be an attorney giving us that direction.
Yeah. Actually, I think in the technical advisor committee, that was some of the discussion. How do we attack these issues? How do we get more permissive roads actually used for local monies and not, as we said, resurfacing it every 15 years or 10 years? That's too soon for Reminderville even. And that's why maybe a subcommittee would help to explore some of these options. Do we need to go to the state? Do we need to amend the ORC? You know, what do we need to do? What avenue to get more local control of our monies that actually is handled instead of somebody else dictating, you know, which roads we can actually spend it on? Or, once again, the confusion where an attorney just decides where it's applicable and not. Get some clarity.
Certainly, that particular pot of money that we're talking about that's supposed to be used on a extension of a county highway within a municipality, I would think the legislature would have full authority to amend that state statute and just say this amount of money is just going to go to the municipalities and we don't care as long as it's used for roadways. You know, take the county engineer out of the mix, because there's absolutely no advantage to the county engineer with that money. But we don't get to keep a part of it. We don't get we don't have any fee for passing the money through or anything. It's just a tax that most communities send us. Actually, after they've spent the money, they send us a form that says where they spent it, what they spent it for, and it goes to my financial department to check to make sure it was spent on a eligible highway, and then we send them a check. So, you know, they don't get pre-approval even. Most communities don't. They just ask for it after the fact. And
what would you say the approximate dollar amount is per lane miles? Or is it just by population?
I can bring that back to the next meeting, or have Joe, if he's here, bring it back. You've got to keep the subcommittee going. You know, I'd get you more information on it. But it varies from community to community. Do you know how much your community gets?
$75,000 a year or so. But again, we let it accumulate into a pot. But then the last time we submitted, we did get the letter saying, no, you can't use that road, so...
Picked a different one.
Use a different road. So our county roads look awful nice, so... But I would suggest maybe a committee made up of attorneys to look at that code if we can't get that code tweaked. And like you said, yes, the state legislator can tweak the code.
You know, you just got to get somebody to ear down there.
Right.
And sometimes they like it if someone did draft what change they want. You know, so they don't have to send it to their legislative committee to just draft the legislation change. If they find that someone's already drafted it up for them, and then maybe it's actually a statewide issue. So maybe the state mayor's association takes it up, and they've got a lobbyist and that puts some help into it. Because just one county goes for something, it's pretty hard. You know, you've got 88 counties. So many representatives down there, but if you can get the state association to help you out, that works too.
Do you know if it's part of the primary $5 fee that you receive?
No, it's gas tax money, as I understand it.
Okay.
I think it's not, it has nothing to do with license tag. I think it's gas tax money. It goes by road miles or something.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure if it's popular. We need somebody to explain that, you know, the details, because from my reading, there's four permissive taxes, and that's where we thought the money was coming from.
I don't
from.
Think the permissive tax is...
There's four license plates.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that's where it's coming from.
Permissive tax. He's right. Permissive tax is part of the
gas tax.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, there are four items on there, so you can get it for $20 back to your community. Some communities are only going after $10 or $15. We added about 5 years ago the last five, and the problem is you're capped at $20 for each license plate. Is there a way of even increasing that? Because that's a lot easier than a lot of other avenues and a lot more palatable for people.
And that's a good point, Amy. We researched that a little bit between the meetings and looked like just about every community in the AMATS area was either at 15 or 20. Yeah, we looked at a map of Ohio, like Appalachian County. Some of those were even at zero or five, the more rural areas, but
Summit and Portage, most people were at 20, and I think everybody was at least 15.
I could tell you a little subject that irritates me a bit, but there's a whole bunch of our highway money that goes to the State Highway Patrol. And you might say that's okay, but I don't know of any city whose highway money goes to their police department. You know, and so I look around and I see the State Patrol patrol on the same streets that many communities have police on. You know, and it would seem like, well, let's tell the State Patrol to stay out of the communities where we're already policing and just send us the money they would have spent on that State Patrol car there. Let us fix our roads with it, you know? But there's a ton of our tax dollars that are, I think it's gas tax money, that's diverted to the Highway Patrol. I don't know. I don't like getting a ticket more than anybody else, but I think that there's probably a few extra highway patrolmen, even on the interstates between here and Columbus, you know, that wouldn't need to be quite as many of them.
So, do I hear a motion to form a committee and the policy committee members?
I'll make a motion that we further investigate our abilities as municipalities to, and counties obviously, to assess. For infrastructure improvements, which specifically would center around our roadways, because we all got problems. I mean, I'm a little village, but I got things that cars are going to disappear.
Well, I think that's what this subcommittee would do and report back to the policy.
That's my motion. Leave out the part about cars disappearing.
I'll second that.
I think that's a motion.
I'll second that motion. That's your motion, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Discussion.
Discussion.
Did that also include the permissive item number one? Because you only said the assessment.
I think the committee should just keep doing all the things that were on the list. And okay. Anybody wants to bring up more and bring in more data?
Friendly amendment of the whole list.
That would be our recommendation.
Okay.
Cover the whole list, yeah.
Thanks.
Including assessments, if you would modify your or take a
friendly amendment. Yes, I'll accept the permissive and assessments and income taxes, or however we can fairly divide this for the number of
years. Yeah, because I brought up the famous John Drew tire tax in this document.
Tire tax. I think we only have two tire stores. We're not going to do very well. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
All right, then if it pleases the chair, we'll work with Gene to maybe put some names forth, or so if you're interested in serving on the committee, you know, see Gene or one of us afterward, and I think it will be a good working group where we can do a little deeper dive. And as you guys mentioned, I mean, if we needed to consult an attorney or talk to somebody else that has expertise that we don't have, we can easily pull them into the discussion and report back to this group.
Very good.
Thanks.
Anything else on technical progress?
That's it.
Federal funds report.
Thank you. The day after our meeting back in March, the Ohio Statewide CMAQ Funding Committee got together and they made a decision to go out for another round of funding this year. So this would be to fill up fiscal year 2021 with projects. So we'll be sending out an email early next week just to spell out the details of this round of funding. It'll pretty much be the same as we did last year. Probably the applications will be due by the end of June, and then at that point our TAC TIP subcommittee will take a look at the applications and score them according to their scoring criteria, and then come back to this committee probably in September for final approval of a list of projects that we would send down to Columbus. Probably about a month from now, the TAC TIP subcommittee will be getting together to discuss some of our funding issues, mainly that we don't have enough funds for the projects we have scheduled over the next several years, and then they'll also be dealing with the issue of do we have the 15% increase for fiscal year 2016 projects. And then looking at our table, if you look to the back side of our funding table, when you look down at the column for 2015, this is about negative $400,000 short Well, we already had a few projects that sold that were under the estimate, so we're in the positive at this point in time. So that's all I have on this item. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Just to add one thing to what Victor said, I think, right, we'll get into the details with the TIP subcommittee, but right now, if nothing changes financially, I think our recommendation would be we don't do that 15% increase for projects, given that we're still a couple $1 million in the hole. So just like the federal government, we don't necessarily want to spend even more money that we don't have, but we can sound everybody out on that, and maybe there's some other things we can do.
Everybody's familiar with what he's talking about? The almost automatic 15% increase for a project that's in the pipeline right now.
Well, will that then create people overinflating their estimate on the front end?
That's, I think, one of the things we need to discuss, because that's, I think you raise a really good point, Amy, that in the past, I think people have been a little more willing to be flexible on their estimate up front because they know they're going to get that 15%. So, yeah, if it were me and I thought I wasn't going to get 15% anymore, I'd probably estimate a little bit higher than
I...
Yeah,
if I asked them 180 or right. 200.
Right, so there would be some sort of a ripple effect. And we could also talk about maybe we could do 5 or 10 or scale it back somehow. Or if everybody's willing to do this, we could give 15, but then that's going to mean that the next round of funding, there might even be less money available. I mean, there'll be some sort of ripple effect it'll have one way or the other, unless we can borrow money from another MPO.
And I guess, are you looking at that moving forward, or the ones that are already in the system that might need the extra 10%?
That's a good question, too. I mean, we could do it as a one-time thing just for this particular fiscal year and revisit it in the next one. We could change the funding policy to, I mean, the funding policy right now is worded that you get 15% if it's available at the staff's discretion. It is the way that it's worded right now. But that's something we wanted to kind of talk through with everybody too. Since we have usually just done it, like Gene said, we don't want to make a radical change to it without talking through it with everybody.
There is a flip side, I think, too, because just like the projects that brought us back whole in this year, there could be surplus monies that we either spend or lose, and we sure don't want to be on the lose side. It's just, do you make a well project that sits there that can go the following year, become number one in the subsequent year, and be the pot of money that we know is available for 15%? There is options. It's just how do we migrate from where we're at to where we're going to be. And be fair to everybody that's stuck in that transition.
Yeah, because I don't think anybody asking for the 15% is adding a whole bunch of extras to their project. It's
right.
Really to cover a percentage of the cost of the project, and it's still the 80-20 split.
Right. That's a good point. And what we also don't want to do is we'd like to try to treat all the projects in the fiscal year equally, so we wouldn't want to tell people in the first two quarters you're not going to get it, but you know, if money becomes available and you're in the third or fourth, so whatever we do, we'd like, you know, we'd recommend trying to be consistent across the whole fiscal year at least.
Anything else? Any questions?
Nothing to vote on.
Okay, thank you. Old business, road diet.
Attachment 4A in the packet. In March, a draft abridged version of the road diet analysis was brought before the AMATS committee seeking their comment and input. Comments were received during these meetings have been addressed and put into the report. Essentially, additional diagrams and photos were put into the longer version of the report that's in your mail-out packet today. By definition, a road diet reduces the number of travel lanes on a roadway and then adjusts or reassigns the space for other uses and travel modes. The most common road diet reconfiguration is the conversion of a four-lane roadway into a three-lane roadway with two through lanes and a center two-way turn lane in the middle. The remaining space can be allocated for bicycle lanes, pedestrian refuge islands, transit bus stops, and on-street parking. A road diet is a useful low-cost tool to improve safety, and integrate multiple modes of travel on a single roadway segment. The staff is recommending approval of the attached road diet analysis. Are there any questions?
Any questions?
I have a comment. I mean, if we're going to adopt this, I don't think I have a problem with the top 10 candidates. I think, you know, the traffic is light enough on those top 10 that probably they're a candidate. However, when we get to the next list, I'm just not sure that there's been enough. I know that the report says, okay, you got to study these and do more. You take a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit road that's four-lane, like Water Street and Kent. It doesn't have the capacity that a 50-mile-an-hour four-lane road has. It has tons of turns. I know that the road diet's supposed to say, well, some of these left turns are safer because you don't have to cross two lanes of traffic. But when you've got people turning, that slows traffic down even more, and it makes the road more congested. Some of these roads weren't made four lanes for no reason. And so, you know, to me, I think if we're going to publish a list, and I'm one person that did a road diet, you know, and I think it's been pretty successful. But there's an awful lot of work that goes into it to have to put it back then, if it doesn't work. And there's an awful lot of political pressure that goes into it. A lot of people are happy, you know, but there's people that aren't happy when a four-lane road goes to a three-lane road. And, the general driving person doesn't realize that maybe it was one of their own family members' life was saved because the road was safer. You know, they don't think that way. But I'm just not real comfortable with the list with some of the roads that are on it without more analysis and, that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know if anybody else feels that way. I don't know that it hurts anything to have them on here, but you could get pressure from various people that want those wide shoulders for biking or whatever, or whatnot, that once this is published. I don't think we should be putting the burden back on each individual community to justify why they're not working toward the road diet when, in fact, there hasn't been enough work done here to show that it's really the right thing to do.
Mr. Gardner?
The road diet analysis list is based on traffic volumes only, as well as the attributes of the road. So those are four-lane roads. It's not a prioritized list. It's a first-cut example for the communities to consider those locations and then to engage in further analysis to consider whether it would be an ideal road diet location or not.
I know what it says, but it's still on a list, you know, and it's not a list that's just going to the highway traffic department of that municipality or whatever. It's a list that's available for all of the public to have and could put a lot of pressure on somebody to do that more analysis. That analysis isn't getting funded anywhere, you know. So who's going to pay for it? The community that's on the list. I personally, if I were in the city of Kent still, I don't think I could justify even putting one dime to studying turning South Water Street into a three-lane road. I don't know. To me, it seems kind of ridiculous. But
be good for 3 months out of the year. So those other nine won't pay us.
It's a part of that. I mean, when the college students are coming and going and their parents are there too, you can't even hardly drive down that street. So I think that, you know, at least each community before this is adopted should have the opportunity to say, take my road off of here. I don't think it belongs. And then there's a couple here that were just recently, this group helped pay to widen them to four or more lanes. And we're saying take them back to three. I don't know if you want to, you know, tell the city of Green that South Main Street now shouldn't have been a five-lane road after we spent millions of dollars making it one.
Well, yeah, my comment would just be that we, you know, Al, you acknowledge this. It's not anything we're forcing the community to do. To the point about public pressure, I mean, the ship kind of already sailed on whether it's in the hands of the general public because it got put out in our mail out and it's a public record.
It's not an official public record until this board accepts it.
Right. Well, in the sense of you would be endorsing it one way or the other, and communities have had the chance and will continue to have the chance. If you're not comfortable with the road being on that list, you can tell us to take it off, but we haven't heard any of those comments.
And I think it's really the Tier 1 segment is strictly identifying the traffic count. And I know you say, well, it's on the list, but it's strictly a traffic count study, and that's common to anything. But I mean, I have really no problem with it being like the way it is.
Yeah, we have these as candidates, and it definitely, I think the report reemphasizes as you go from Tier 1 to 2 to 3, your likelihood of it being a feasible road diet definitely lessens. You know, Tier 1, honestly, we felt like those were almost all things you could do today and wouldn't have any impact on traffic. Tier 2, you start to get to ones you may not ultimately want to do. And Tier 3, I would say the majority of those probably wouldn't be road diets. But we, you know, we just, to make a comprehensive analysis, we wanted to pull, because the roads on Tier 3 even have very different characteristics. There are some that you know, Portage Trail in Cuyahoga Falls, for example, and this isn't picking on Cuyahoga Falls, but I'll say it since if you want to make Cuyahoga Falls or Portage Trail really 25 miles an hour, a great way to do it is to have it be two lanes. You won't be able to ticket people anymore because they'll have to drive 25 because of the conditions, but that's why Cuyahoga Falls tickets so many people on Portage Trail, because you can drive it at 40 or 45. Being someone who got a ticket for 42 when I was 18 on Portage Trail, you know, that. And I think that's what we're looking at from a traffic standpoint. If you have a four-lane road that you can really drive at 40 miles an hour, the question becomes how much congestion is there really on that road? Other roads, you really can't drive them very fast, and we wouldn't recommend them as a road diet.
Yeah, I felt the same way, Al, when the pedestrian mid-block study came out. It was more, I just took it as a study. If the community wants to do something with it, they can. I look at it this way, the same way. If you want to take it further, you can. I mean, this is just something that's showing that, damn, that's what they do with studies, and this just shows some work completed. But it still is up to the community to further investigate. This is just kind of, okay, these areas you may want to look at further. If you don't, you know, it's up to you. You still have to have the funds to do it and have the resources to do that, but this is just something that you study and look at, and it's something that's worked in other places, so on the list, that's how I look at it. You know, there's
no
management study. We know where the congestion is in the different parts of our cities, but you did the study to show it, and we know that, so if we want to work forward to improving that, then we can. This is just information.
There's no intention from anybody at AMAS to use it as a grading tool to gain points on a project.
No.
And there'd be no negative points pointed on a project if you don't make it three lanes. So,
are you sure that won't come next? You want to pave South Water Street and they say, well, you didn't road diet it, so, you know, it's not eligible for federal money for paving.
I think we'd have to vote that one down.
Well, you would, but maybe everybody else wants your money.
I mean, our intention right now, that's a good point to raise. Our intention right now would be, I think the most we would even recommend doing with this come application time would be, you know, somebody writes a letter of intent to apply and we say, hey, just wanted to let you know this is on the list if you thought about doing a road diet there. And that probably would be more the Tier 1 or Tier 2 segments. Like I said, we don't expect, I think, on most of the Tier 3s that they would probably be viable.
I get a request almost every week from someone. I'm an active on their road tire somewhere now. And it's just, okay, well, we'll look at it when we can, or, you know, I know it's not going to warrant it or something, but the term is out there and people are getting familiar with it. So I think I think it was an appropriate study, and that's all I take it as.
I move to approve item number 4A.
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Planning data forecast. This is also under old business. I think there was Portage County contingent was somewhat concerned with the data, and I think there was a concerted effort on the part of AMAT staff, and we thank you for that.
Mr. Chairman, they're very happy with that, so I'll let you know. From the end of them.
Thank you, everyone. Good afternoon. Yes, absolutely. What you see in Attachment 4B is a revised version of the previous draft of the MS planning data forecast. And what necessitated that was exactly, as you've mentioned, particularly in Portage County, some members felt that the population in particular didn't quite represent the recent trends we have seen in recent years regarding population. And one thing that kind of held us back, in the past we've been constrained by state-level population projections. We kind of had to stay within that, but thankfully we called ODOT, and they gave us a little flexibility to try some new methodologies, and we didn't have to adhere exactly to those. So that really gave us a lot of opportunities to look, and we've devised another methodology of forecasting population through 2040. The new methodology that we've incorporated is using full census year data only. The previous version used, it's called American Community Surveys data, and it's actually based on surveys. So there's quite a bit of fluctuation from year to year. The counts used on actual census years are a lot more, there's a lot less disagreement. They're actual full counts of the population. We felt that was a better way to maybe measure population, really get a good good feel and a good projection as to what we've experienced in the area. And after we updated the population for the draft you have before you, that trickled down to several other. We do 35 variables total for this process. The primary purpose is to load this data into our regional traffic model, which estimates traffic levels around the area based on land use and a lot of these variables. A secondary use of it is we review them throughout our various planning processes, and they kind of inform the process to let us know maybe where our high growth areas are and things like that. Once we updated population, that trickled down to several other variables that are population-based, such as the population that's under 18, the number of vehicles that would be in the area, and variables such as that. After performing this revision and this new methodology, we sent the revised data out to every member of the TAC and policy committees for their review. This is about a month ago or so. We also held an open house at the MS offices. Some of the technical details, if anyone wanted them, were a little more complex than we could do through email, so we wanted to be available to answer any questions anyone had about the process. We received several responses, and they were all positive. We were glad to hear a lot of positive comments from Portage County from the last draft. And some of the key results with the new changes, for the Annette's region as a whole, we're expecting a slight population growth through 2040 of around 2.4%, and we expect to see employment outpace growth at a pretty healthy 7.6% through 2040. And when you look at Summit and Portage counties, as well as the Wayne County portion, every one of those, the trends follow the regional trend with slight population growth and slightly stronger employment growth through 2040. Just as a reminder, to calculate this data, we look at very small traffic analysis zone levels, and then we aggregate them into larger areas. It's hard to present them at that tiny level because some of these zones, they extend into different communities, so you can't get like a one-for-one, you can't just isolate Stowe's and, various communities. So what we do is aggregate them. We do isolate a few specific cities, some of the more major ones in the area, and we divide the rest of the MS area into what we call sub-areas. These are all communities that are very closely related, very similar in characteristics, and just geographically close to each other. This is a map of that division that we use for this process. So this map here, it's also located in your report there, represents the population forecast under this new methodology. There are still a couple communities that will lose that we expect to lose population through 2040. However, it was an across-the-board increase after we've revised the numbers. The ones that do lose significantly less in this version than the previous one, and we definitely think that it looks a lot more on par with what we've kind of experienced through, you know, the recent analysis of the census and everything. So the staff recommends your approval of this report. Once it is approved, we will load the data into our regional traffic model, and then that will allow us to proceed with several other portions of planning processes that we do for our big long-range transportation plan. And if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you. Yes, sir.
Is Norton in the Southern Summit District?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
Portage County moves to adopt.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. The motion passes. New business. Resolution 2015-07, adoption of the Transportation Improvement Program for 2016-19.
Okay, just to review some of the basics of what TIP is. Sometimes it's called the Transportation Improvement Program, sometimes we call it the TIP, sometimes we call it the TIP. So anyhow, it's a listing of highway, transit, and bike and pedestrian projects that are scheduled to be implemented over the next 4 years. Even though it's a four-year document, we update this every 2 years, which we're doing right now. And all these projects are supported with federal, state, and local funds. And I got a slide that gives a little more detail on that. Projects that are listed in the TIP have to be consistent with our long-range plan. Sometimes we call that the regional transportation plan. And in order for a project to receive federal funds, it needs to be listed in this document. It's also used for coordinating projects, and it's also a good source of information for the public to see where these projects are coming up in their area. It gives them the limits of the project as well as the costs and when it will be built. And then there are some federal requirements that I'll go through in detail right now. So the first one, fiscal responsibility. We devote a whole chapter to showing that we have projected enough funds to be available over the next 4 years to support all these projects. That includes federal, state, and local funds. And out of our funding, we get about, between the Surface Transportation Program and the Transportation Alternatives Program, we get roughly $10 million a year, so if you add that up, that's about $40 million over the four-year period. And that's just a breakdown between the two. So the other requirement that we have is to conform to air quality requirements. The state implementation plan for air quality sets budgets for mobile emissions, and what we do is run an analysis, and we're part of even though we're one region, we're part of a bigger region. In terms of air quality, that includes the Cleveland area. It's an eight-county region, and we run an analysis to show that we're in those budgets in terms of air quality. And in the appendix, there's a whole, the analysis there is in the appendix of the document. The last thing, requirement we have to meet is public involvement. We advertise in the local newspapers. There was a two-week public involvement period on the TIP. Within that period, we had a public involvement meeting. And at that meeting, we had one person show up. So this picture is definitely not a picture of that meeting. The TIP was also available on our website as well as our office. And just to go over some of the numbers in the TIP, there's roughly $720 million worth of projects spread out over roughly 100 projects between roadway type and transit type projects. And it's mostly supported by federal funds, which covers about 54%, and then local funds at about 39%, and state funds at about 7%. And then these pie charts roughly cover a year of a 10-year period, the two previous TIPs, the current TIP, and then the larger pie chart is this new TIP. And the most significant difference that you can see that's changed over the years is that yellow color, which is capacity type projects, and that's down to 7% in the TIP for this new TIP. And then 52% of the funds are dedicated to roadway maintenance and operational type projects. 40% of the funds in the TIP is dedicated to transit. And then about 1% is bike and pedestrian type projects. But within that 52% part of the pie chart, there are definitely bike components on those projects. It's just there's no easy way to pull those that amount of funding for those projects out. Okay, so for those who maybe aren't as familiar with our TIP table, just quickly go over it. Starting on the far left column, you'll see it says PID number. That's a unique number that ODOT assigns to every project. The next column, that CORTE section stands for County Route and Section. So in this case, this is in Portage County. It's Ethan Drive. Next column talks about the length of the project and then location of termini, where it is, what are the endpoints of the project, type of work being done, and then the fund type, in this case state and local, and then phase. So C stands for construction, P further down on the table stands for preliminary engineering, and then R stands for right-of-way phase. And then in the next column in 2016, you can see it shows the amount that's being paid for that particular phase, and then the total project costs, who the sponsor is, and then the air quality status of that project. So staff recommends approval of adopting this new TIP that covers fiscal years 2016 through 19. Then at that point, after this time, we would send it on to Federal Highway and Federal Transit Administration for their final approval of the document by the end of June, so that July 1st, this document becomes active. And in the memo, in the resolution, you just have the tables that list the projects, but the complete document is up on our website.
Just one comment real quickly. I thought Victor did a nice job on those pie charts that summarize and linking it to our earlier conversation. You could see what a huge amount of local funding there is, even in the TIP. So even though we're talking about the most important roadways as well as the transit systems, a very large share of transit funding is coming from those local sales taxes. And so, you know, when you trickle down to the local level, obviously almost all the funding is local. But I think it makes our conversation even more pertinent. You know, how do we work within the system to maximize those local funds without overburdening taxpayers, which is a tricky balance to achieve sometimes.
Questions? Comments? Motion?
Move approval.
Second. Motion and second. Discussion? In favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Resolution 2015-08. Approving the fiscal year 2016 transportation planning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As many of you know, we're approaching the end of the fiscal year, which our year ends June 30th. Because of that, and every year, AMETS is asked by the Feds and ODOT to put together a work program which shows what work products we're going to be expected to complete over the next year. It also defines what our budget is, what the local share is, as well as ODOT's contribution to our planning program. So basically the main products that we are going to be working on this year is, now that we've just approved the new TIP, maintaining that TIP over the next year is going to be an important part of that. Again, we'll be doing our traffic counting program. We'll also, this year is one of the first years we're going to have to start working on developing performance measures that is required through MAP 21. Those performance measures are going to be used to benchmark us versus all other MPOs and other regions, as well as give us an indicator of, you know, how well we're doing in terms of things like safety, congestion, economic impact, etc. So that's going to be something that currently is still being codified through the Federal Register, but that's something that we are going to have to start to dip our toe into this year. We're also going to be doing most of our congestion analysis, things like our freight report, bike and ped reports, as we continue to move through the plan development process, getting to 2045.
And if I can, or 2040, I'm sorry, if I can draw your attention to Table 2. Table 2 shows what the official local shares that we will be asking for from communities. Those, usually we will send out requests for those in June. Actually, our local share request has decreased this year due to ODOT removing some of our CPG funds due to a budgeting issue. That we have supplanted with some surface transportation funds, about $70,000, but those funds are able to be matched with turnpike credits, so therefore there's no additional local fee on that. So we're asking for $148,063 from our locals for our share. Be happy to answer any questions, but otherwise the staff does recommend approval of this document.
Questions? Comments? Motion.
Second.
Motion and second. Discussion. Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Resolution 2015-09. Start.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 6C in your packet are two resolutions, 2015-09 and 2015-10. These are two annual resolutions that AMATS must pass each year in order to remain certified as a metropolitan planning organization. Resolution 2015-09 affirms that AMATS' annual approval of the current regional transportation plan, transportation outlook. The same resolution also reaffirms the existing TIP, which you just approved, and affirms the consistency of both of these documents with the state implementation plan for air quality conformity. Resolution 2015-10 certifies that the AMATS transportation planning process is being implemented in compliance with all of the applicable federal requirements. AMATS transportation planning process is conducted under the supervision of ODOT. The staff is recommending approval of these two resolutions. Are there any questions?
Questions? Comments? Motion.
We pass them both together, is that what we're doing? Yes.
It's almost housekeeping, but we can separate them if you like.
No, I don't. As long as we're not in trouble, I'll move it to the next and set it.
Motion and second. Comments? Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, same? Other business? We're done.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Thank you.